Reservable. It's the reservable. It's the reservable. It's the reservable. Coming to you every day.
Welcome back to The Reset Rebel with me, Jo Yule. And it's been a little while, but last month I went to see an evening of Balearic Shorts as part of the Ibiza Cinefest. And as all the directors got up at the start, for me, one stood out. His London accent captured my attention, and after watching the selection, his creation was also my favourite film, The Last Free Man on Earth. So it seemed rude not to invite Kayan onto the podcast to tell us a little bit more about his short film, which he made here on the island about a man in search of enlightenment, a platinum-selling record producer who left his hedonistic life behind to live in a cave. 9 years later, he is still grappling with that question: what does it mean to be free? So, feels like a good place to start, Kayan. What does it mean to be free for you as we're sitting on this Balearic lump of rock looking over Kalionga with some terrible music in the background?
I think exactly this is it means having the choice to do what feels right in the moment. I think that's what freedom is for me, at least. I feel like a lot of the world is structured to be in a certain routine and for you to repeat the same things. And I feel like as human beings, we evolve and we change so quickly. And so for me, it's always having the opportunity to do what I want to do when I want to do it. That's what freedom is for me, at least.
I mean, how's that working out for you in a place like this?
I mean, yeah, pretty well. I feel quite fortunate. I feel like I've had a lot of opportunities, and I can't complain. We're sitting here in the sun doing an interview about my film. I'm down in the studio working on another project, so it could be a lot worse.
You don't live on the island full time, though, do you?
No, I live in England, but I lived here for 2 years. I came to Ibiza for the first time. I'd never been here before. Someone I sort of knew invited me over, and I came for a 2 week holiday. But on the day I arrived, the lockdowns happened. So all the flights back got cancelled. Couldn't get back to England. It was a tragedy. So for 3 months I was stuck here. And then in the end I was like, do you know what? I'm living on a beach, like a flat overlooking the beach, and it's beautiful. I think I'm just going to stay. So I was renting a flat in the UK and here at the same time, which was obviously not ideal. But it was just a testament to how much I was like, I need to be here. It just felt like the right place for me, a place that I felt really creative. So yeah, I stayed for 2 years, and now I come back and forth as much as I can.
I don't think you're the first person to sort of come here and not want to leave. So that was quite fortuitous, I guess, that you were stuck here for the lockdown. Although I gather I wasn't here. I was stuck in India. The same thing happened to me. But where was the flat?
It was on Nil Blau. So there's the beach in Santa Olaria, a little beach there. I literally met a yoga teacher on the beach, and I was like, yeah, it's such a cliche, isn't it? for me, never having been here, I thought I was like, wow, what's happening? This is such an original story. Yeah, and I was like, I'm looking for somewhere to stay, and she was like, oh, I have a place, and so I rented her place, and it was great. And then during the rest of the time, I moved around, different parts of the island. But yeah, Santa Olaria was always my favorite. Yeah.
What was the name of the yoga teacher?
I won't say, because no one here rents their apartments legally, do they?
No, I just know. I know the building, because I was looking at your Instagram earlier, and it was the yellow and white building that's very close to Nil Blau on the right hand side. As you look out to see a couple of my friends own places there, because I live around the corner, and I just wondered if it happened to be a good friend of mine who's now moved to Bali.
No comment.
very secretive. So you fell in love with the island then, and obviously you're kind of like backwards and forwards and forwards and backwards. And what is it that you do full time? Obviously you've got the filmmaking, the music, and that's all going rather well by the looks of it.
Yeah, music is my full time. Well, the thing about being self-employed is whatever you decide to do that day is your full-time thing. But music is where everything is sort of stemmed from. And then filmmaking came from that, like me wanting to tell other people's stories, not just my own. And I did a bunch of like music videos, and I did a visual album where I shot videos like around the world, and I got into directing and editing through that. And then I made like my first short film, which is literally made on two GoPros on my kitchen floor. And I won £10,000 worth of camera gear from it. So I was like, now I have no excuse not to get into filmmaking. But I'd never had a camera, used a camera before. Spent months on YouTube, like figuring out, learning it. And then literally came to Ibiza. And this film, The Last Free Man on Earth, was the first thing that I ever shot. And so it ended up being shot over like maybe like a year and a half, 2 years. For me, when I watch it, I can tell like what was shot in what period, because I kind of figured out what I was doing a bit more. But yeah, it was such a sort of serendipitous moment for that to happen, my first ever thing. Yeah,
incredible. I mean, I thought the selection of films that evening, I didn't stay for the whole thing, I've got to be completely honest. I was actually so traumatized after the second film, I really considered leaving even earlier. I was just like on the edge of my seat, just like gripping, and my knuckles were white as this very scary scene of how would you even describe what happened? You probably can do it better than I can.
That was the one with the people in the room, right? And the chaos and the blood. That sums it up. The people in the room with the chaos and the blood and the screaming, a lot of screaming. When it had the credits were almost as long as other people's films, so it had a big budget going into it, but it was harrowing. Yeah,
I mean, yeah, I think there should have been a warning before that was shown, because I really wasn't ready for that. And then yeah, luckily I stuck it out, and yours was obviously the first film to be shown, which was a very strong start. But going straight from that into, you know, number two was just like, I was actually only there for the Aguascopio short, who were actually the last guests that I had on the podcast, the trio of women who I love dearly. And they are also my favourite film. You know, you can't have favourites in this world. I just wanted to say that before they were listening, going, hang on a minute. Love you guys. But I think, yeah, it was an amazing way to begin. And I guess you didn't meet Alex when you were in lockdown, because you probably didn't leave the house, no?
No, that is when I met him, because the lockdown I was in, it was you could still sort of go around. It was I arrived just after they had the quite extreme thing, so you could go to beaches for exercise and all that sort of stuff. But I met him one morning. I'd just been to Atlantis to try and shoot the sunrise. But I obviously didn't realise that the sun didn't rise on the island, on that side of the island. So I drove like 45 minutes to get there, arrived. I was missing like an attachment for my camera, and I was like, oh God, like what have I done? This is such a nightmare. I've come all the way here, and now, like, I can't even do what I've come here for. So I was really, really kind of pissed off, and I was like, all right, I'm going to just go home and call it quits. But then I decided, you know what, I'm going to stick it out. So I went across to Punta Galera. Yeah, and I used to take my camera everywhere with me, because I was just so obsessed with filming. And I was walking along Punta Galera, and I could see, you know, all these rocks with writing on them, and there's this guy sort of making a cup of tea, and I was like, do you live here? And he was like, yeah, and I was like, hello. And it kind of went from there. Like I kind of went back every day just to talk to him and spend time with him. And there were so many days where nothing happened, we didn't do anything, I just kind of sat and was just, you know, in the energy. But that's what I think kind of allowed the film to be how it was, kind of observational, rather than a lot of films now are quite aggressive in the way they push the story. But I really wanted this to just be like a verite observational film, and that happened just from spending a long time with him. Yeah.
At which point did you realize that he was completely stark raving mad?
I don't think I ever did. This is like what I loved about meeting him, and what I wanted to do with the film was I wanted to tell the story that and my experience of him was like the first time I met him, the juxtaposition of him having had this other life, you know, when he was into music and the success he had had. I was like, wow, you know, for me it was quite exciting. And then also I think there's a lot of people who want to do interesting or different things with their life, but it takes quite a lot of bravery to really do something different. So at the beginning I was just really inspired, and I was like, wow, like, do I want to live in a cave? Like, it was like that sort of energy. And then bit by bit, you know, you start to see the cracks in it, and I started to notice that you know, he was suffered with addiction, and, you know, he experienced a lot of sort of profound loneliness and had a lot of anger towards a lot of things. So it was that, but then still there was, you know, I'd go back and there'd be these moments, these flashes of like clarity and like real brilliance in amongst moments of madness and just complete, you know, other stuff. So that's what made it so interesting for me, because at the end I was still in that place where I was like, has he figured something out? I don't know. And that's kind of why I wanted to let the audience sort of make their own mind up about. And I think people will receive it differently depending on where they are at in their sort of journey.
I mean, it felt like a kind of a spiritual mission. He was saying about the 7-year kind of cycle of needing to follow a specific path. I recall that, you know, clearly, I know he's been there longer than that. He's been there 9 years now. So he's clearly like gone beyond and moved into, I don't know, some kind of like higher enlightened state that, you know, we all wish to get to in a lifetime. But do you think, you know, is that something that inspired you? You say that you were even considering it yourself?
Yeah, I think just the, it really makes you consider what is valuable in life. And for me, you know, I'd come from lockdown. I'd come from complete darkness in a small flat in Cambridge, and you know, where I was just really depressed after the whole COVID thing, and coming from that, and I remember standing, you know, in Punta Galera and looking out and being like, this view is like, that's an expensive view, you know, you have to spend a lot of money to get that view. And he has a constantly changing wallpaper, you know, depending on the time of day, the season. And it's just a place that is just such a pleasure, you know, to be in. But obviously there's that like juxtaposition between that and then obviously the harshness of, you know, sleeping outside and not having as much. But it really makes you sort of think about, you know, what do you need? When I left my flat, I left behind a lot of equipment and clothes, and you know, I only had 2 weeks worth of stuff with me. But I didn't need it for that entire 2-year period. I didn't miss it. And I remember going back and I was like, oh, I kind of wish the garage it was in like just burned down so I didn't have to worry about it. So yes, so for me it was a lot of that. It was kind of like it really makes you assess what's important in your own life.
All you need is less. I remember reading that on an Instagram post somewhere.
Yeah, that's, he's got that on his rock.
Oh, maybe that's where I saw it then. I can't remember.
It's at the end of the film. Yeah.
I mean, it's interesting because obviously, as you said rightly, that billion pound houses on Ibiza, you know, probably wouldn't have the kind of views and existence that he has. But it also seemed like he had like a constant traffic, really, and community of people passing by, and this opportunity, even though he was lonely and, or you know, obviously experiencing life from a different perspective, he was very immersed in some ways also in kind of this wonderful opportunity every day, because he never knew, I guess, what surprise was going to come his way and who might bring him something or pop up with a bottle of wine or whatever else they might have had on them after a big night out.
Yeah, what's the question?
Well, I guess, like, yeah, I think, like, is it even legal to be living in a cave like that? Have you ever kind of, were you nervous about ousting him, or like is that even allowed?
So he used to have a bigger setup at the cave, you know, with a lot more things out on the rocks and, you know, more of a structure. But then the police came and they took away, like, you know, most of his stuff. And so they are okay with him living there as long as he keeps everything back, like, from the rocks. But he's really good at, he's kind of made friends with all of the people, all the rich people who live up on the hills, and he does like a lot of gardening now for different people who live in there, and he's like preserved like a lot of the paths and planted a lot of things along there and kind of kept it really nice. So he's got that sort of nurturing thing about him. But also for me, I think we need people like that, you know. I feel like he is a tourist attraction, and so many people in the world are like are repeats of each other. So when you come across someone who is different, I think that's something that you have to nurture and sort of pay attention to.
So what was your intention then after spending all this time with him? What was it that you wanted to showcase exactly through his experience?
Yeah. Well, this is the thing. When it comes to filmmaking, often, you know, the director is trying to tell you their opinion. It's quite hard to remove your bias from filmmaking. But for me, the way I made this and the way I filmed it, I really, really just wanted it to be exactly how he was. I really wanted it to be this, you know, it wasn't me. Obviously, you know, you always edit something and you always change it in a certain way. But I was like, how can I capture this person exactly how they are? So for me, it was that. It was realizing there are so few people like this on the planet. And it's important to like have a time capsule and a representation of who is this human being. So there was no agenda beyond that, of just apart from being like, this is a slice of life. This is a person who exists. What do you make of it?
I mean, he is utterly unique. There's no denying that. And obviously, you know, that captivates your interest because it's like, you know, we all have these romanticized ideas about living in these far-flung, rustic desert island places with nothing. But I think the reality of that, particularly after the lifestyle he'd had prior to that, is, you know, a very brutal and quite huge transition. So I think it's, you know, yeah, it was just utterly fascinating. And actually, the way you edited it together was quite artsy as well, which I really, really loved. I cannot believe like that's actually just like the very first video that you've ever made. And so he's actually still there. I actually heard a rumor that he'd passed.
Yeah, I mean, you just told me that. So as far as I'm aware, he's still there. But since you telling me that rumor, I have to now go back and check, because that would be a tragedy. Yeah.
It would be a tragedy, but I think, you know, that's quite incredible that he's managed to last almost a decade in such harsh conditions. But, I, you know, how long do you think it takes him from what you've witnessed and what you've obviously had chats to him over probably copious glasses of wine? You know, how long do you think it takes to adjust to that kind of living?
It's an interesting question. I think it's... My experience of the world is that it takes a few days to get rid of the whole, you know, like when you worry about your whether your clothes are clean and getting dirty and all that sort of stuff. And I think once you get over that and you get comfortable with, like, you know, if you go camping for a week or something, and, you know, or a festival, you don't get to shower, you reach a point where you're like, ah, okay, you know, especially once you're removed from the rest of society, I think it makes it a lot easier, because, you know, he because he's so isolated, he's not worrying about how do I smell, or, you know, do I have this or do I have that. There's a lot less comparison for him. So I'm not sure how long it took him specifically to adjust, but I think it's a constant process. I think that's what he's always figuring out. And I think he finds it a lot easier in what, well, it's that weird thing, he finds it easier sometimes in the summer because there's a lot of people and there's tourists and there's, you know, a lot of things people for him to interact with. But at the same time, he loves the winter because then he has the sort of peace and isolation. So that's kind of what I mean about, you know, this whole growing in life, is that I don't think you ever really figure anything out. It's a constant learning process.
So do you think he is truly free?
Wow, do I think he is truly free? I think he is freer than a lot of people in some ways. I think, yeah, the freedom to kind of speak to what you believe in, the freedom to live the life you want to live. He doesn't have to do a lot of things that we have to do. So he definitely has his demons, but he's definitely found a lot of freedom in comparison to a lot of people. Yeah.
At what point, though, like, did he decide suddenly to go and live in the cave? I mean, for people that haven't seen it and they don't understand what his life was like prior to that, I mean, what was, do you think, that kind of decisive moment where he was like, yes, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to park up here and stay here for the next decade.
Yeah. I think, you know, him having been in the music industry and having seen success and been around a lot of celebrities and having a lot of drugs and that whole sort of lifestyle is, you know, One thing he said is, you know, when you have two, anything gets boring, no matter whether it's good or bad. And when you have, when it's, that's your life all of the time, you get to a point where you're just like, this is just sad. And I see that in a lot of people I see, like celebrities who have made it and have been there for a long time. I always think, God, they must be so depressed. Because the whole point in life is to like strive, isn't it? And to like, oh, damn it, I'm so annoyed about this, I've got to get to that point. But that's what gives you a reason to wake up in the morning. Imagine you just done it. What then? You know? And so, yeah, that's kind of how I see it.
Very interesting. Yeah, I guess I hadn't really thought about it like that before, but that must be the story of basically half of Ibiza. You've got these whacking great big houses on the side of a mountain. And what is next? I don't know.
We have to ask them. I'll let you know when I have mine. When I got my big old villa, yeah.
Yeah, I'll be over. Let me know. I'm ready. I mean, I think it's interesting because, you know, I'm heading towards 200 episodes of this series now. And I sometimes interview someone and I think, yeah, they're going to be a really good friend. And actually that has happened on quite a few occasions. But there's also the examples of like, yeah, you interviewing somebody and then not becoming your friend that you were like, oh, that's a shame. I really like to hang out with that person and spend more time with them. But I think after the vast quantity of hours and time that you put into that project, do you think you'd go there today and get like a hero's welcome? Is he someone that you classify as a friend, or is he just someone that you got to know?
That's an interesting question. That's one that I have been asking myself. He's a very, very interesting character. It didn't even really feel like we were making a film a lot of the time. And you know, like I wasn't, for example, I wasn't able to put a lapel microphone on him. He never answered a direct question. Like, that's one thing that was infuriating in the beginning, because, you know, I'd go there with like, this is the direction I want the film to go in. Here's my list of questions. And he would just, you know, I'd be like, oh, how long have you lived here? And he'd be like, I've been here for 2000 years. And I was like, oh, here we go. You know, it's like that kind of thing. And I fought against that quite a lot at the beginning. But then I just decided to kind of embrace it. And I just realized that he was just doing him. So now it's like, I feel like he's always very kind. Like, he shares a lot. That's one of the things I found, you know, quite striking about him, is that he always made me food. Like, you know, he always made me something, and salads and all this. He's a very good cook. So, which is incredible. But yeah, that's something that I found quite special about him, and that's something he does for everyone, regardless of whether he knows them or not. But yeah, regarding whether he would consider me a friend, I don't know. I don't think so. I think he is quite consumed in himself. There are a few times where I was like, oh yeah, I'm also in the music, and he'd be like, oh, and I was like, okay, who am I kidding? But that, you know, that's like, so that was quite a draining process for me, because when you spend a lot of time with someone who is very much in their own world, you do get to a point where you're like, okay, that's hard work. But yeah, I don't know, like, I don't expect him to operate and act in the same way I do with other people. So he, you know, he is just who he is, and I receive him how he is. I'm very fond of him. So that's how I'd put it.
Very fond. I love that word, actually. I haven't heard it for quite some time in that context particularly. I think, you know, intrigued as to, you know, talking about the intention, were you, I mean, if you couldn't even put a lapel mic on him, I feel your pain there for sure, especially doing what I do. But I think, did you consciously put the camera on like every day? Was he aware that you were actually, right now we're filming? Or like, how many hours were you actually hanging out as mates or potential budding friends? And how many hours were you like, okay, we're going to film this?
There was no, okay, we're going to film this ever, which was so difficult, because it meant I could never plan anything. I would just turn up on a day. Some days he wasn't there, and I was like, okay, going back home. Some days he would just sit in his cave all day, and I was like, okay, cool. But literally my whole thing was just there just to blend into the background. I would just sit there and he would just go about his life, which is a very inefficient filmmaking process. But, you know, saying that, for me it's the kind of films I want to make. I feel that there's a lot of pressure now that the network's putting on documentary filmmaking for them to fit into the same sort of structure as Marvel action films, and it means that, you know, a lot of documentary films and films in general just becoming a lot less genuine. So for me, I was really, really like strong about that. Like, I really wanted it to be completely honest. And so, yeah, I would just sit there all the time, and I don't think he knows what I filmed or what I didn't film. And yeah, he was like walking off somewhere, and I'd like chase after him with the camera, or I'd shoot him, you know, from a really long lens from far away, and he'd just be in his own world. So yeah, there was no like stop start process. It was more like, how much battery do I have? How much space do I have on my hard drive? It was more that. Yeah, I missed a lot of good stuff. A lot of stuff happened where I just put that on the camera, and then he'd do something. I was like, ah! But that's kind of that's kind of how it is, and I quite like that, you know.
In terms of like patience versus poignance, like how many, you know, how much time do you think that you invested in terms of like the real kind of golden moments?
I spent a lot of time with him, and I think, you know, like I say, over two years. And then on the last day of filming, it was like that was when all of the exciting stuff happened. I don't know if it's because he knew. I was like, oh, this is the last day of, you know, that I'm going to film. I don't know if he then just turned it on, because a lot of the stuff, like the way the film starts, he's like, oh, welcome, oh, this is paradise, and oh, the Illuminati, and he's like talking quite directly to the camera. That was the only time he ever did that, which was quite interesting. So for me, it was almost like I based the whole film like primarily around like that one day, and then just bringing in all these other elements over the sort of 2 year period. So yeah, it took a long time to kind of get those sort of real golden moments. Yeah, I was there for absolutely weeks, which is something, yeah, you just couldn't do it. I could only do that because I was doing it off my own dime. I was making it by myself. There's no other team involved. Otherwise, it would have been a very high budget production.
And for you, what was the most poignant moment then of the whole film? Like, what was that one little absolute nugget that you probably will actually take away into your own existence for the next lifetime?
Well, it's two different questions there. For me, I'm like, the moment that sticks out most is when he wipes his butt with a dollar bill. I'm not sure if I'll be taking that into my future life with me, but...
You might.
Yeah, but when he did that, I was like, oh my God. No way. Did he just do that? And I'm holding my camera and I'm actually recording. That when that happened, that's when I kind of felt like this is it. Just because it summed up his whole character, you know, like who does that? No, like, do you know what I mean? Who does that? Like in the privacy of their own thing, let alone when there's someone there, let alone when they have a camera pointing at them, just pulls down their trousers and you can see like the balls and the whole package. Do you know what I mean? It's like, it's quite rogue, isn't it? So that, I was like, wow, this is gold.
I'd forgotten about that. I'm glad you brought it up.
How could you forget about that?
I don't know, actually, but it was extremely graphic. You had like either the zoom lens or you were just literally like almost sniffing his butthole because you were so close.
No, I was literally right there. That was a wide angle lens and I was inches away. Yeah.
I mean, if that's the start of your filming career, where do you go from here?
Retire. Yeah, it is one of those things where yeah, I have been thinking about that. Like, it's such a serendipitous thing, and they're the only kind of films that I want to make. And you just have to be patient. It's like, for me, having my whole experience with music and being very used to courting inspiration, just waiting for those moments to happen. I very much recognize that that's just how it is. Like, it has to happen like that. You can't force it. Yeah.
I mean, I like that because I think there's a lot of forcing that goes on in Ibiza, that's for sure. And clearly that wasn't the case with that film. And, you know, it was incredibly obvious that you'd been there a lot. Mm. And I like that because I think when you invest time into something that you're really, truly passionate about, good things happen. So how easy was it to get a slot in the Ibiza Cinefest?
I mean, I submitted it and they said yes. So it was that easy.
But I mean, you know, if that's your first ever film to get that in a little mini festival, that's pretty exciting because I thought the caliber of footage was very, very high, actually.
Yeah, I think for me, I'm very ambitious. So I sometimes have to like check myself and be like, oh, let me, you know, because of where I've got to in with other things, you know, I just have an expectation that it's going to happen again. But then I'm like, wait a second, this is your first ever film. And it's in a film festival, and it also got selected for Short of the Week, which is like, you know, one of the biggest online platforms for short films, which is like my dream to get my film on. And I was like, that's incredible. And I really had to kind of celebrate that in myself. And when I sat down that night and I looked at all of the other films and I saw, you know, the credits rolling by and the teams that were involved, and I was like, I made this by myself as a, you know, first-time filmmaker, and I composed the music. And yeah, I felt really sort of proud of myself. And it's just a testament to me of, like, you just have to do what you believe in.
Has he seen it?
He hasn't seen it. So I didn't have a car when I came here last time, because I wanted to show him the film before I screened it. But then I also didn't want him to see it for the first time when there were other people there, just in case he didn't like it.
Just wiped his butt on it.
Yeah, exactly. We don't want that. But I think there's going to be another film festival that is going to show out here in the summer. So the plan is to go and bring him to that. Yeah.
I like it. I can just imagine you turning up with a little mini projector and then sticking it on inside his cave, actually. That could be quite a nice little party. Can I come, please? I think, yeah, I mean, I think that's absolutely a moment that you should set the letter. I think that's absolutely a moment that you should celebrate. I mean, for sure. Like, what are the chances, really, I guess, of, you know, investing that much time and having that kind of a subject for the first ever film that you've made? I think it's absolutely amazing. But obviously you're here doing something completely different, and you're making music. So let's get into some other stuff. Like, obviously, what else? What are you up to now, making an album?
I have actually finished a new album that I wrote and produced. I haven't released any music in quite a while, just because I got into filmmaking, as you know, that sort of consumed me for the last few years. But yeah, I've done that, and I'm going out to LA soon to play for some labels out there. I was signed previously to Universal, and this is like 10 years ago. I had my whole, like, music industry thing. So this is like my second coming, because people keep coming up, people keep finding me. It's really annoying. I'm there trying to give up. I'm there like, look, I did it. I tried the music thing, and now I'm just gonna leave it now. But you know, people keep finding me and coming forward and being like, oh, you're like, you have to do this, and I want to do this with you. So I'm really just trying to, like, follow what is being provided. And I was talking to this girl the other day who wants to work with me now on this project, and she's like, oh yeah, I had a meeting with Stevie Wonder last week, and I want you to meet him, and I want you to come to the studio here. And I'm like, oh, here we go again. You know, it's that whole thing, like, that, you know, that excitement again. So I'm in that space now where I'm like quietly excited again about music and the possibilities, because that's where, for me, that's where everything kind of stems from. But I'm honestly doing so many things. I have that album today. I'm working on, like, a, you know, music for a film trailer. I've been making a side new business where I'm making like music and films for different brands. I'm making it like another documentary about something completely different. I'm doing like a lot of stuff, but I love it that way, because I think it's really important to be creative in lots of different spaces, because they all inform each other. You know, it's like, people often ask me, like, what sort of music do you listen to inspire your music? And I don't, you know, for me, it's other art forms or other conversations that inspire music. And so when it comes to making a new film, the reason I think that the editing of my film is interesting is because I wasn't a filmmaker. I was a musician. So I was approaching it with that sort of sensibility. For me, that's what it is. It's just staying fresh, working on lots of different things, and just always focusing on trying to make art that matters. That's what I care about, making things that leave the world in a better place.
I mean, I saw that you had some medical setbacks, which is why you kind of almost jacked in the singing or had to take a little restival. But I think ultimately it's interesting talking to you, because I kind of consider myself to be a creative. But it's like, you know, in those moments where it's not going your way, and as we said before, it probably wouldn't be that exciting if it really was anyway. Actually, what is it that keeps you going? Because I think it is quite hard in those kind of black kind of holes that come up, you know, fairly frequently, I think, to say, right, I'm not going to throw in the towel, and I am going to continue and put my faith in this, because this is what, you know, this is what I want to do. This is what I was born to do.
Yeah. honestly, it is very difficult. It is almost like that torture, like loving something that much and it being so much part of you, because it's so hard. It is so hard to give up. For me, you know, I started off with some real like exciting opportunities when I was younger, but it took me a long time because I didn't come from like a family who knew anything about entertainment or music or anything, and I really had to figure out my own way there. So by the time I got there, I was like, oh, I've like earned this because I've been going at it, for years. I was being told all kinds of things by like, the chairman of Universal and, Alicia Keys' manager and Adele's manager and all these people being like, you're going to be the biggest star in the world, and you've been driven around in blacked out cars and putting up in hotel suites and being flown around. It was like such a, like an exciting thing of like, this is my life, and you think your life is going to go in a certain direction. But then as life goes, when it doesn't go there, it's like, well, what do you mean? And that is a really difficult thing to deal with. And for me, after I left the label, it was so hard to kind of, because you lose a lot of confidence in yourself, and you feel like a great sense of like injustice, and your life goes on a completely different path. But then you pick yourself up again, because ultimately you're like, no, but I still love this, and I still have things to say, and I still feel like what I have to say is valuable. So you keep going, and you get another knockback and another one and another one, and you're like, ah, surely it's gonna happen. It's gonna happen now. So it's, for me, it's like a mixture of like, of trying to have perspective in that my entire life I've spent making art like I've never had a normal job. And I realise that is quite rare, and I'm really lucky. I've been able to buy, a property, and I've been able to just do this full time and travel the world and do all these kind of amazing things. So I have to accept that I have been successful, and I've met like a lot of my idols and all that sort of stuff. But then you still have ambitions. You still have places that you want to go as well. For me, it's a difficult question, because I constantly want to leave it and give up, but then it's always at that moment something else comes along. Like my last moment of giving up, the thing is, I say giving up, it's not, the giving up isn't that I'm going to do anything differently apart from just think differently about where I'm headed. I still make the same stuff, but I'm just not thinking it's going to go to wherever it's going to go. But so like last year I was like, okay, I'm getting on a little bit now. It's not really going to happen. Then I made a video called Blackwash that I posted online. Like, well, went viral on TikTok, and then Lena Waithe, this like Emmy-winning actor and film producer, sort of found me and was like, oh, this is, that was a whole other thing, because it was something that wasn't even to do with. It was like acting and music and this whole sort of other space I hadn't even done before. And so for me, it was like, again, here's me doing something that is not even what I do. And I've attracted like, one of the biggest names in like Hollywood. So that was like, oh, okay, people still see something in me. I still have something to say. I have to keep going. And then again, like I say, I was just about to throw out these new songs online. I was like, okay, I need to release them. I've been holding onto them for so long. And then this person gets in touch last week and is like, oh, I want you to come to LA. So I think for me, it's that. It's like other people keep dragging me back in. I'm just here making my thing, and other people keep like rediscovering me and being like, oh, you. And I'm like, yes, me. I've been here for like 20 years now. Do you know what I mean? But yeah, so that's what keeps me going. Just the love for it and other people dragging me back in.
I mean, you say you've been here for years, and you look about 25.
Yeah, no, I'm not 25. I'm 34. Yeah.
Old age has hit.
Yeah. I feel like I've been alive for 2,000 years. I feel very, very world weary.
I feel you. It's just like living on this island is exhausting. Well, I think it's amazing that the power of social media can actually do that. I mean, you know, sometimes I do just think, what am I doing posting on all these ridiculous channels for no particular reason? But, you know, good things happen. And that's obviously evident in the way that you've obviously applied yourself to different mediums and different ways and different kind of ideas. I've seen obviously lots of different things coming out of your Instagram since your film launched, and the fact that you're, you know, making music perhaps for even, you know, unpublished music so that people can use it on videos and things like that. So I think it is well worth dipping your finger into as many pies as possible when those moments of like, should I continue to keep doing this arise? Because I think walking away from the thing that you absolutely love doing is devastating. But like, what's the biggest challenge then that you faced in the music industry specifically up until this moment? Because there's clearly a story there.
What's the biggest challenge? I guess there are a few. So for me personally, it would be self-belief. I think that's once you lose that, you're sort of doomed. You know, if you don't believe in yourself, nobody else is going to. So that's been my personal biggest challenge, is trying to get back the arrogance that I had when I was younger. I used to be so cocky. I was like, I'm going to be the biggest thing in the world, and I'm so great, and like, listen to me. And, you know, people can have a negative, negative connotations, but I think it's really important as a performer to have that inside you. You still have the deep insecurities like anyone does, but you need to have that feeling of like, I have something. Otherwise, you can't expect anyone else to pay attention. So I think I lost that for quite a long time, and I've been trying to like get that back for a while. So that's been my personal biggest challenge. But in terms of like the industry in a more broader sense, I think it's timing. Like when I started off, it just wasn't the right time. People think it's good to be like an innovator or someone who's at the beginning of something, but if you're ever too early, people don't really know what to do with it. And for me, musically, what I did just wasn't what was happening. It was still very much radio territory, and they wanted like these upbeat, catchy, you know, pop hits. And I was, you know, writing these sort of down tempo, emotional, you know, like love ballads and, you know, all this sort of stuff. And then, you know, a few years after, you know, Spotify was happening whilst I was signed to the label, in terms of this, like the charts and things like that. And so the industry changed, because it wasn't about radio anymore, it was about Spotify. And then it was mood playlists, so you could have different styles of music. And then you had all of these other artists like, you know, Frank Ocean, and, you know, these sort of these artists who were doing more hybrid sort of down tempo music. So the industry changed, but I was just like, I was at the beginning of that. And if I'd come later on, who knows what would have happened. But that's why you just have to keep doing what you do, because there's a mistake you can make sometimes where you feel like you're the one doing something wrong. Because I feel like, you know, it's important to look at yourself and be like, well, what can I do better? But I think at a certain point you have to realize that it's not always you. Like, the world sells you this illusion that you are 100% in control of yourself. That's what, you know, all the social media gurus are telling you, like, you know, I can do this, you can do this, like, just buy this course and la la la. But the truth is, it's like, no, you can be very talented, very intelligent, very hardworking, and just not get to where you deserve or where you should be, just because the world is not a fair, just place that puts people in those places. It's just like, it's a lot to do with luck. It's a lot to do with who you know. It's, you know, a lot to do with just random stuff. So you just have to remain constant doing exactly what you believe in, and then hopefully the world will spin at some point, and it will be your time, and it will make sense. And that's kind of how I feel now. I'm like, I was talking to my mum earlier, just saying it would be really ironic if now was the time where, you know, for me, for music or for film or whatever, like, things like went, you know, stratospheric, because it's like, this is the time where I'm like, I'm not even thinking about that anymore, and I have all these stories of things that I'm doing now where I'm like, you know, like, you know, pitching to companies to like go and shoot their campaigns for their summer camp, just like random stuff, and I'm like, and I'm being asked to go in, you know, in studio with Stevie Wonder, and you know, do you know what I mean? It's a wild world, but yeah, you just have to timing is a difficult thing. Yeah.
What are your hopes for the Stevie meeting?
Well, if we don't know if it will happen, yeah. The thing, it's weird now, because yeah, I was about to say, I don't really hope for things in the same way now. I just sort of take things as they come. My hope is just for the opportunity, like just being in the room. That's all you can ask for, isn't it? It's like, you can't control anything else. You can't control how people receive you or what actually happens from something. But I'm like, if I end up being in Stevie Wonder's house, I would be like, I've done something right. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. I mean, I think many people kill for that opportunity. I didn't even know he was still alive, to be fair. So yeah, that's a good innings.
Don't say that, because honestly, I had a nightmare the other night after we had the meeting where I was like, because I'm ill right now, and I was like, what if I go and meet Stevie Wonder and I give him COVID and he dies? And then my legacy is that I'm the guy who killed Stevie Wonder.
So good work for you, though.
No. Stevie Wonder is like my absolute idol. So I'm really, really paranoid about that. So let's not talk about anything to do with death and Stevie Wonder, please.
Or the caveman. Bless him. I hope he's still at Punta Galera. I think we need to pop down there and do a follow-up episode and see how Alex is. What was this pitch to you as, to go and meet Stevie Wonder for what exactly? To collaborate with him on an album?
Oh no! So this is just someone who wants to manage me, and so they were just talking about, you know, their vision for where things could go for me, and the kinds of people that they, you know, the kind of rooms they want to get me into, and the kind of people they want me to be around. So it came up in terms of that.
And so you say you came from a family that wasn't, you know, in any way, shape or form aligned to filmmaking or audio or singing or anything like that. Like, where did this all begin for you? I'm quite intrigued to hear the kind of initial process.
Yeah, I think all kids begin like into music and dancing, and I think, I feel like it's quite a normal thing, you know, for kids to be like, oh, I want to be a pop star or whatever. I think that's quite normal, but I think certain people just don't stop, and so for me, it's like that. It's like, I was quite introspective. grew up on like council estates where it was like, you know, I wasn't around the kind of people that I was kind of into. But then it was also in Cambridge, so it was like a sort of like really weird like divide between people. So I just spent a lot of time in my room just reading. I was really into like building worlds and into like imagining these different worlds and stuff. And so I think music was just that for me. It was just like my way of kind of expressing who I was, and it was just, I just became obsessed with it. And I used to play this little Casio keyboard we had in the house. It's like you're gonna play two notes at once. And then my mum sort of, my parents like saw that I became obsessed with this. They bought me like this other keyboard called the DJ X2, which was £150, which was like an astronomical amount of money. And you know, so I was 14 and I was like, oh my lord. And I just played it every single day and I was just obsessed. So that's kind of where it began. Just the ability, I just think, like, in this world, the ability just to make something that has never existed before, that's quite a profound feeling. You know, most people might only get that when they have a child. You know, it's that thing of, like, bringing something into existence that is there after you're gone that hasn't existed before. I'm like, wow, that's what a privilege, you know? So for me, it's that. As soon as I, as a point at which I remember other people sort of noticed that I was good at it, and that was quite a shift, because I was like, oh okay, maybe this isn't just me just being a kid and doing music. Yeah, and so I just carried on. I've always been like very stubborn. My parents wanted me to get, you know, various jobs doing different things, and I was always like, no, I don't want to do that, my time is precious. I want to spend my time doing something else. Yeah, so I think it's just been like that. I've always just been like, for some reason, I've always just felt like I'm supposed to just do what I want to do, and that I'm just going to do what I enjoy. And I really feel like that, like, you know, this, our time here is so short, and I'm like, I just don't want to do anything I don't want to do. And, you know, that it's a privilege to say that and to be able to act on that, and that doesn't always happen, but I'm like, I'm going to push for that as much as possible. And for me, that has just been making stuff.
I mean, I was quite intrigued when you said that you managed to buy a house out of doing what you love to do. I mean, at what point was that?
That was last year. Yeah. But I mean, that was very, very, you know, in this industry, things are very up and down. I happen to have done, you know, pretty well in, you know, 1 year and the year before. So I was able to get a mortgage because of that. If I tried to do it the year after or the year before, it wouldn't have happened. So yeah, I think that was just a stroke of luck. But now I'm like, I don't want it anyway, because I want to go to LA
and live with Stevie.
And live with Stevie, Daddy. Oh yeah, that'd be great.
You have to come back and tell us what happens over there. I'm already like, oh my god, when are you going?
Well, so I'm waiting for the girl. I asked her, this is what I'm saying. I'm like, this is all stuff you're not really supposed to say in interviews, because it's like, she's like, between you and me, this is what's happening. And I'm like, oh yeah, so this is what's happening. And so none of this might happen. I might be making it all up, but if not, I'll let you know.
What's going to be your opening gambit to Stevie?
The thing is, there's just nothing you can say just to people like that, because anything you say is kind of obsolete. It's like, oh, you're a genius. Oh, obviously I'm a genius. Like, everybody knows that. Do you know what I mean? Oh, you're great. Like, there's nothing you can really say. I actually don't know. I think I'll just panic. Yeah, I think I would just. But the thing is, like, you know, I've been around people who I've admired before, like. You know, I had the opportunity to be in the studio with Nile Rodgers, who, you know, sold 500 million records, and Chic, and all that sort of stuff. You know, and he said some very complimentary things about me, but the nature of the relationship was still like, it wasn't, you know, whoever the person is, I want to be on a friend's level with them, because that's the only space that things can happen from, you know. So for me, it's about that, like the first initial, like, oh, you're great, blah, blah, blah. It's kind of like, yeah, great. But it would be cool if it was just about talking about other things, about just life in general, and like what he thinks about the meaning of life, and, you know, like what he's excited about, and, you know, what sort of food, let's have some food, let's just chat, you know. That's what I'd want to do, just have like a normal human conversation.
No, I mean, I'd love to have dinner with Stevie Wonder. I mean, let me know what time to come over, won't you? And what's on the menu?
Yeah, well, I will.
It sounds dreamy. I'm super excited for you. And yeah, I'm also very intrigued to hear some of your new music. Yeah. And but, you know, what kind of direction are you going in now?
So many directions. So many directions. What I want to do now is I want to, because funnily enough, the song that this person was most drawn to, who I sent most recent music to, it was a voice note that I recorded on my phone, which is hilarious, because I'd spent thousands of pounds and months working on these other songs, and then they're like, oh, I like this voice note you sent me. And I was like, great. But I kind of agreed, because it was a lot more stripped back. It was just me and the piano. So I think for me, it's that. It's about just getting back to it being really raw. It's all very, very lyrical. It's, you know, me talking about, you know, my experiences growing up and feeling like an outsider. You know, my therapist saying, oh, I think you're on the spectrum, and me like relating to that and thinking about how my life has been up to this point, or about social media and, you know, the weird dichotomy of, like, you know, having like a war on your right hand side and then trending dances on your left hand side, and this world where those things are competing for the same real estate, you know, and about mental health, and, you know, this whole conversation you have with your brain, where you're like, are you even serving me? Are you on my side? And having like that sort of breakup with your brain where you're like, actually, just leave. Yeah, I'm going to do this by myself. So the music I'm doing is very like conceptual in that way. That's kind of more so than like genre or instrumentation. I focus very much on like that part of it, like the storytelling and the concept. Yeah.
But so you're making the music and doing the vocals as well. So you're doing like a little bit of both.
Yeah. Singing it, playing it, producing it, doing everything.
Incredible. I mean, what is this struggle? I mean, you talked about it on social media that you'd obviously sort of struggled with mental health issues. But was that like a direct, you know, reaction to lockdown and everything that went on? Or is that sort of, you know, maybe a spin-off of the life that you've led, kind of with these ups and downs and the creativity and everything else?
I think it's a big question, because there are definitely like scientific reasons for why people, you know, just chemically are just different to other people. I do think there's you know, in the same reason why I have an aptitude to make things and to do music, I think I might have an aptitude to receive the world in a slightly different way to other people. So I feel like I feel things really profoundly. Like I say to people that I feel like I walk around without any skin on. Everything just matters too much to me. I'm very sensitive, which is what allows me to make art and to have empathy. But it also means that I find like the world quite overwhelming. So yeah, I think that's kind of the reason for that. And then yeah, obviously you have your life experiences. I haven't chosen the easiest life path, you know. I realized that. I said to my friend the other day, I was like, why do things always like go like crazy or wrong or have drama? And they're like, because you're always like breaking new ground, you're always doing something different. And when you do something different, you know, you can fail or you can have drama. If you were doing something safe, you probably wouldn't have those ups and downs. But then you wouldn't be who you are. So yeah, for me, it's like, it's trying to understand who you are and then figure out the best way to exist within that. So another big part of it for me is weather. I'm like so affected by the weather. I get, as soon as the winter comes around, I have to just leave. So that's why I'm here. So I think for me it is very much like a chemical thing. Like when I'm in the sun, I'm a different person to when I'm in the UK. But you just get born where you get born and you don't know. And I think a lot of people don't. It's like the whole like boiling frog concept. It's like if you're in it and it's happening slowly, you don't really know that you're dying. And I think a lot of people are like that. And yeah, so I think it's that. And then a lot of existential stuff to do with, you know, purpose, why we're here. And I have a lot of strong feelings about, you know, when it's like we know what all like a lot of the problems are in the world. And we as a society just accept certain things as carrying on, like, you know, massive corporations not paying any tax and, you know, all of the thousands of places on the island that are just unoccupied. You know, it's like we know like what the issues are, but they still continue. And I think it's quite hard I find it really difficult to live in a world where you just know all of the issues and you're like, how can you not be cynical about stuff? But at the same time, it's trying to find joy in realizing that you can't change everything. Because I think that stops us from doing anything. It's like a process of inaction, of just being like, it's so overwhelming that I'm just going to give up. So for me, I'm trying to find peace in just doing what I'm here for, you know. And I'm like, the way I can serve the world and myself best is by telling stories, is by making art. And I think if I just align with that best, that's what will make me happiest.
That is kind of how I feel about podcasting. And the best thing about this is that for the entire hour that I sit here with you, I'm not sitting here worrying about my own problems or thinking about my own madness upstairs. So, excuse me. Thank you for that. Much appreciated to have had this meditation and to listen to your amazing story, which I've thoroughly enjoyed. And I'm really, really grateful that you would make time on a Friday afternoon to have me beside the poolside. It's been glorious. I feel like there should be a naked waiter with some pina coladas on the way.
Yeah. Dennis!
Oh, here he comes. Amazing.
Is he actually there?
No. Sorry. Like one of those butlers in the buff that you hire on Hindus in Brighton or something.
Yeah, yeah, I'll look this way.
It's the Reset Rebel. It's the Reset Rebel. It's the Reset Rebel.